Yeah, thank you for the welcome. Okay. Thank you, Robin. Thank you for the invitation again. Great to be with you. So, don't need to introduce myself after that, but just want to spend some time this morning reminding you of some of the things that are going on in the world, and to give us a different perspective, hopefully, from what we get on the news. So, it's been an amazing year. Year on year, the atrocities seem to get worse. But in one way, it's been a good year that I think nobody in this country can have the excuse of saying they don't know what's happening to Christians in some parts of the world now. What has been a kind of almost a secret held within the church is now common knowledge. I want to start off just by looking a little bit at Iraq and Syria. Could we have some... am I in anybody's way here? Can you just kind of wave at me if I block the screen for you? Now, you all know from the news just how awful things have become in the Middle East. It's just descending into more and more chaos and violence, and we need to constantly remind ourselves that we've got brothers and sisters in these places. So when you see the news and you see what's going on in Iraq and Syria, please remember our brothers and sisters there and pray for them. Just a little prayer there and then. Prayer really makes a difference. But I want to show you some of the relatively good news that's coming out of those places that you don't see on the news, on the telly. So thanks to the generosity of Christians in this country and in other countries, channeling money through organisations like Open Doors. Christians who have had to flee the violence in Iraq are receiving help. This is a picture of a lorry load of food being delivered in Iraq, and similar things are going on in Syria. If we could have the next one, please. Within the safer areas of Iraq where Christians have fled to, mainly in the Kurdish areas, you'll know from the news the Kurds are the people who are putting up some resistance to the Islamic State movement. This kind of aid is being distributed, and this is a workshop. People are being given training in just getting started with a new way of life, funded through gifts that people like yourselves have given. Another one, please. Yeah, this is a little business. Whenever I go to some of these Middle East countries, it's amazing how many barber shops there are. And considering how many beards there are in those countries, you think, how do they make a living? But yeah, barber shops are very common, and this is somebody who's just been trained through Open Doors Ministry. Next one, please. This kind of gives a realistic picture of how tough the conditions are. You know, in a lot of the refugee areas, people are living in pretty awful conditions. And we sometimes forget that just because it's in the Middle East, they do have winters as well. It gets very cold in winter if you're not in reasonable accommodation. Many of our brothers and sisters face a cold winter in pretty poor accommodation. Please pray for an improvement in that situation. And the next one, please. Yeah, literacy. Again, it's been a major part of Open Doors Ministry. We're not just a Bible delivery organisation, although that's what we're famous for in our early days, but it's all kinds of help in socio-economic and education fields. So this is somebody giving some literacy training. And another one, please. Here's some ladies being given some training in dressmaking or some kind of use of cloth there. And another one, please. Ladies hairdressers as well. And people using various craft skills to make things to sell to get a living. Next one. Yep. These are things that are sold in the tourist trade or for export. And one of the most useful ways of helping people, which a lot of other organisations do as well, it's not just giving out money to people who are suffering poverty, but to invest in their lives by providing a means of them becoming independent. So in many countries where Christians are out of work, Open Doors will provide an animal or a small holding for them to develop economic independence. And that's really useful. All these things are going on in Iraq, despite all the horrible things. And similarly in Syria, aid is getting through. Thousands, we're actually supporting several thousand people in each of those countries who've been made homeless and destitute. Next one, please. Now, this is a verse that I often quote when I speak about the suffering church. Just to remind us again that we should not be surprised at suffering for Christians. Jesus said it would happen. Jesus said, if anyone comes after me, he must deny himself, he or she, and take up their cross daily and follow me. Luke 9:23. Jesus wasn't joking. He wasn't messing about. When he mentioned the cross, taking up the cross, people knew what he meant. It was because they saw crosses on their street corners with people dying on them. And when Jesus said, if you're going to be my follower, he's saying, be prepared to count the cost. That's what people have to do in huge parts of the world now. Next one, please. Again, verse you'll have heard me mention before. Not to be surprised, he said, if they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. It's the same enemy we're facing. The enemy is not Islam. The enemy is not communism. We have one enemy who appears in different guises who encourages persecution of Christians. Next one, please. I want to take you now to... anyone know what that flag is? Anyone recognise it? Iran. Now, because of all that's going on in Iraq and Syria, we don't hear very much on our news about Iran. And in fact, there are overtures largely between the West and especially the United States and Iran to improve relationships after all the Ayatollah years of just terrible relationships, breakdown of diplomatic relationships, and lots of suffering of Christians. We are seeing some change, but the suffering of Christians is not changing. There was an election last year, and the famous Ahmadinejad handed over power to President Rouhani, and there were great hopes that things were really going to change. But Christians still face huge problems in Iraq. Next one, please. This church is an Armenian church. There's been a traditional Christian presence in Iran for many years, largely through churches like the Armenian Church, which is tolerated. It's not in any way illegal, but anyone who calls himself a Christian will be a second-class citizen in Iran and will face persecution of some sort. Armenian Church continues to maintain its tradition. The next one, please. This one is an Assemblies of God church, and they are considered to be much more dangerous because they're growing. It's actually quite dangerous to be part of a growing church, because what the Iranian government, just like most places where Islam is the majority religion, the government regards anybody who converts to Christianity as an apostate who deserves to die. So it is particularly dangerous to go to a church like this. They're watched by the secret police. People will be arrested. Anybody who shares their faith with somebody else is in danger of arrest and even of execution. Although very few people have actually been executed in Iran, to be honest about that, but the threat is always there. Next one, please. Again, I just want to remind you of the perspective of Peter, who knew what it was to face extreme persecution himself in the New Testament times. And this is what Peter said. Don't be surprised at the painful trial that you're suffering as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. And you're probably heard me say before, again, this just seems one step too far when Peter's talking about rejoicing in participating in the sufferings of Christ. And yet, I want to introduce you to some people who have found that that is actually possible and that we can actually learn a great deal from their experience. Next one, please. How do they do it? How can people maintain a deep faith in Jesus? How can people be prepared for the suffering and even the threat of death that comes from being a Christian? Somehow they have to overcome. And I want to just raise your awareness today of three crucifixions. I'm not talking about the three crosses that we traditionally think of on Mount Calvary, but the crucifixion of Jesus, the crucifixion of self, oh, this is going to be heavy, isn't it? And the crucifixion of the world. Next one, please. So firstly, the crucifixion of Jesus. This is what Paul wrote to the Corinthians. I'm so glad we had communion today, just to remind us afresh of what Jesus did for us. But this is what Paul wrote to the Corinthian church, sometime after having spent a long time in Corinth. You know, Paul, on his missionary journeys, would sometimes do a fleeting visit somewhere, preach the gospel, and move on after facing all sorts of opposition there. But in Corinth, the book of Acts tells us, he spent a long time there, preaching day after day. So he wrote to them later saying, I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Paul's saying, you saw me, you saw how I behaved, you saw how I talked, and you know that the only thing I was interested in while I was with you was Jesus and the fact that he died for me and for you. Paul was not afraid of being called boring. He was not afraid of being called an extremist. He was not afraid of being accused of having a one-track mind. Paul said, you know that the only thing that I was passionate about was the fact that Jesus died for me and changed my life. Why did he say that? Because Jesus did die for him and did change his life. Paul, as you know, had been an ardent Pharisee and actually one of the most ardent persecutors of the church, arresting people to be led off to their deaths. But he had a personal encounter with Jesus. He met him personally and his life was changed forever. And because of that, he just became passionate about Jesus and the fact that he had died for him. When I think about that, I'm just so conscious that my own passion for Jesus fluctuates. I'm so aware of my inconstancy. But before I get too dejected about it, I'm so conscious that Jesus doesn't change. Jesus is ever faithful. And Jesus's love for me does not fluctuate. And that's what kept Paul going. But when I think about Paul's consistency, it motivates me to think, I don't want to be inconsistent. I want to experience that passion that he had so that the love of Jesus radiates through me and touches all the people that I meet. I want to be like that, even though I don't do a particularly good job of it. Next one, please. So I want to introduce you to two young Iranian women who had that passion that Paul had. People who didn't want to talk about anything but Jesus. Now, despite their very glamorous appearance, these are not ladies who are preoccupied with self and their appearance. These are ladies who were really preoccupied with Jesus. If you want to know more about them, I've got this book for sale. I've got some free literature at the back there and also some books that you might want to buy. I really do recommend this book as one of the most encouraging books I've ever read. In it, they explain what happened to them. So they were passionate about what Jesus had done for them. Now, they weren't brought up as Christians. They weren't brought up in Christian homes. They were brought up in Muslim homes. And both of them had identical testimonies, even though they didn't know each other in their formative years. Each of them says the same thing. And this is something that we need to grasp their perspective of Iran, of Islam. I always encourage people, please don't see Islam as the enemy. Please pray. And it's getting more and more difficult with what the news that we hear coming out of the Middle East. But the perspective of Jesus is that he loves Muslims. Jesus loves these people but wants them to discover the truth about him. And really, the only way that's going to happen is if somebody tells them. And if we all become resentful and hateful towards Muslims, understandable though that might be, we're not living the way that Jesus wants. And in this country too, we're surrounded by Muslims. These young women's testimony is a great way of sharing. In the way that Peter wrote in his epistle, always be ready to give an account of the faith that you have, but do it with, I forget the word he uses in the New Testament, in the NIV, but it says do it with courtesy, with sensitivity. And this is what we need to do when we share our faith. But the perspective that these young women had of Islam was this. They were told you can only pray to God in Arabic. They don't speak Arabic. In Iran, the language is Farsi. Arabic is a foreign language. Muslims all around the world are expected to pray in Arabic, in a foreign language, because that was the language that Muhammad spoke. Why would God want you to speak to him in a foreign language? And something in their hearts thought, why does God want me to speak in a language that's not native to me? They wanted to read about him. They had to read the Quran in Arabic, because any other language is considered to corrupt the Quran. Why? They had so many questions. And the presentation of Allah, this God that just imposed a fatalistic view on people. No relationship. You couldn't relate to him. And something in their hearts wanted that if there is a God and he created us, then surely he wants us to relate to him. He wants to speak to us and wants us to speak to them, to him. And both of these two young women separately had this desire to know God better. And they didn't find that satisfaction in Islam. They didn't know where to look. They looked into other religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, didn't find any satisfaction. And somehow, both of them separately managed to get hold of a New Testament. And completely on their own, without any help, they read it and discovered that God sent his son into this world. In the way that Paul discovered, sent his son into this world to die on a cross, to take on himself the punishment that we deserve, so that we could be free from punishment and enter into relationship with God with this love that Jesus gave. And as they read this news, something in both of their hearts began to glow and burn and just say, this is it. This is what we're looking for. And each of them separately gave their lives to Jesus as a follower of his, as they began to worship. Both of them, again, independently, were baptized in the Spirit and found as they were praying, speaking in tongues. God did this without them having to have hands laid on them in a waiting service or anything like that. God filled them with the fullness that he wants every one of us to have. As they got this passion, they really felt they had to share more and more of Jesus. In Iran, you cannot get any... there's certainly no Bible schools where you can get trained in learning the scriptures more, learning any kind of Christian skills. So both of these young women separately heard that in Turkey there were Bible schools, and in Iran you can relatively easy get an exit visa to go to Turkey. You can't do that to a Western country, but Turkey being an Islamic country, they were able to go there and enroll in Bible school. And that's where they met each other. And they were able to, they formed an incredibly close friendship as they recognized that both of them had the same experience. As they graduated from Bible school, their options that they they thought about the options. Should they go back to Iran, such a dangerous country for Christians, or go in somewhere else in the West and just share their experiences? As they both felt a passion to evangelize, to share their faith, and both of them felt God's call to return to Iran. They, as converts, they were going to be in enormous danger if they shared their faith. But this is what they felt God calling them to do. And what they did was they found contacts who would smuggle Bibles in Farsi into Iran for them to deliver. They started just pushing them through all the letterboxes in their neighborhood. They started traveling around on taxis. In Iran, as there are in maybe some of the other countries that you visited on holiday, there are communal taxis, which are more like little minibuses that just drive around and fill up and people hop on and hop off. And they would just ride around on these taxis armed with New Testaments, get into conversation with people and give them out. And they did this for several years. And in the course of those several years, got through thousands, literally thousands, of New Testaments in Farsi. They were systematically working through the city of Tehran, crossing off the streets where they were just pushing them through letterboxes as well, trying to cover the whole country. And they knew that they were doing something very, very dangerous. And eventually, the law caught up with them and they were summoned to the police station and where they were imprisoned on pending trial on charges of apostasy. Converting to a way out of Islam into another religion. Can we have the next one, please? This is the notorious Evin prison in Tehran, and this fairly nondescript entrance is where people gather very often to hopefully to get a glimpse of their relatives as they once they've been sentenced in court, and this is where they go in. Or where they come out on those that are actually released. But this is a shocking place. Next picture, please. An aerial view showing just what a somber place it is. Now, that is one of the most horrible prisons in the world. This is where political prisoners are tortured routinely, executed. Executions take place in there routinely. And these two young women, they were eventually taken into this place after several days in a detention centre. As they were admitted, and the guards that registered them and admitted them asked them what their crime was, and they said that they had been sent there because of preaching Jesus. The guards would react pretty much consistently, saying, "Oh, you're for the high jump, then. You know that is that's punishable by death." Next one, please. So they were passionate about Jesus and the fact that he was crucified for them. Now, what kept them going? Well, this is what Paul wrote about. How he kept going through all kinds of adversity. Paul wrote to the Galatians, "I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." That's a challenging verse, isn't it? I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Well, of course, Paul didn't literally face physical crucifixion. What he was saying was that myself is now, the old self is dead. And in fact, even the current self that has been changed by rebirth is still being placed on a cross, because it's not me that's being presented to the world. It's the Jesus in me that I want to see just becoming greater. Me becoming less, him becoming greater. What in fact he was saying is Jesus is in the driving seat of my life. Now that is not a concept that sits easily in our society. Do you know what the most popular music at funerals is these days? Statistically, apparently the most common music to play at a funeral is Frank Sinatra singing "I Did It My Way." And that's what people love to be able to say when they're remembering their loved ones. "He did it his way. He was a character. He did it his way. She did it her way. Not influenced by other people. She did it her way." That is not the concept that Paul is presenting here. Doing it our way is very much part of our culture. It's for those of us that are children of the 60s, it was really around that kind of time that self-determination, it's always been part of human nature, but from the 60s onwards, it just became part of our culture that has affected our view of God. And why, really, I believe our society is so now so anti-God. If there is a God, then we have some accountability to him. If God created us, then we owe it to him to find out more about him and learn how we can serve him, learn what his will is for our lives. But it's why so many people these days just don't want to know about God. They don't want that accountability. They want to do it their way. Paul says, Jesus is in the driving seat of my life. My wife and I used to run discipleship classes in our church. After people had done the Alpha course and made a decision to follow Jesus, we would take them through a discipleship program. And I always remember one young woman. She was a really nice person who decided to follow Jesus. But when we had a session on this particular topic about putting Jesus in the driving seat of our lives, she said, "Does that mean I'm not actually in control of my life?" And we had to just discuss, well, what does it actually mean for Jesus to be in the driving seat of our lives? And she came to a point where she made a decision, "I'm not prepared to do that. I've been impressed with what I've heard so far, but I am not prepared to just surrender control in the way that seems to be asking." And I respected her for that. It was very, very sad, but we weren't able to move her on from that position. But at least she was honest with herself. Are we honest with ourselves about letting Jesus be in control of our lives? Well, can we have the next one, please? Well, these two young women, Mariam and Marzieh, had to learn what it was to say, "Yes, I am crucified. I've been crucified with Christ." And this is a picture that was taken from within Evin prison. I don't know if that was taken. It wasn't taken by these two young women, but it's a picture that somehow has been got out. And that is not typical of the ward. That just shows a really clean floor. What they encountered was just absolute filth, squalor, people being treated like animals, people being fed like animals. And they set about setting a different standard in the place. So when the food was just shoved into the place in a communal saucepan with no utensils, and people just dived in like wild animals to grab a handful of whatever was in there, they refused to do that. And they actually went hungry for several days. And in the meantime, they just kept on sharing what they knew of Jesus. As they people lived in communal cells. The door they call them a ward, were locked. But within, they had freedom to walk around different rooms within there. And gradually, their room became more and more overcrowded, because they became known as those who prayed for others. They would find those who were crying themselves to sleep, those who were feeling really distressed, couldn't bear what they were going through. They would just come alongside them and say, "Can we pray for you?" And they would pray the peace of God into people. People would ask them, "How is it that you have this peace?" They would have the opportunity to share Jesus. And what they found was that their prison experience meant that they witnessed personally to far more people than they ever witnessed to in the outside. In the outside, they were having brief conversations or just shoving a New Testament through somebody's door. Here, day after day, they were sharing Jesus, and people were just coming to know that peace in themselves. They actually shared their faith over a period of a year with hundreds of women. And they set a different standard. They got to, the guards came to trust them. The guards allowed them to clean up the toilets, which were disgusting. The guards allowed them to set different standards about how people were fed. And their presence not only brought Jesus into the cell, but brought different standards of humanity. That's how their experience was of being crucified with Christ and no longer living in their own strength, but in his. Can I have the next one, please? And the third crucifixion that Paul mentions in Galatians 6:14, he says this: "May I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world." It's almost the same as the previous verse, but the reverse side of the coin. So he's saying, I've been crucified, but the world has been crucified to me. Because of my passion for Jesus, whatever the world has to offer is of no account to me. I'm not interested. Not interested in what goes on in this world. All I'm interested in is the kingdom of heaven and its values and what I can do for the kingdom of heaven. Next one, please. I could talk a lot more about these two young ladies, and if you're interested in hearing more about the story, you might like to buy the book. Please, no pressure. It's actually $9.99, so not a cheap book, but a wonderful story. But enough about them for now as we try and come to a close. I want to introduce you to several other people who are now in prison. Mariam and Marzia were released after almost a year in prison with the threat of death hanging over them. They went into court several times. Their case was protracted and protracted. But because people around the world, and I think you were praying for them in this church as well, you may remember, because of a campaign of publicity and of prayer, the Iranian government actually relented and just wanted rid of them because they were too much of an embarrassment. They now live in the United States and are traveling the world, telling the story and doing it very, very effectively. Wonderful story. But where they left off, there are at least 60 other Christians in prison in Iran at this moment, facing the same kind of conditions. So this man here, he was mentioned in Open Doors newsletter a couple of months ago, Pastor Farshid Fathi, a passionate leader of a house church movement. The house church movement is considered the most dangerous of all. They are real subversives as far as the government are concerned. They don't know what's going on in these places. They don't know about the growth that's going on. They're just terrified that large numbers of people in Iran are experiencing what Mariam and Marzia had, coming to know Jesus and worshipping in relative secrecy. And this brother leads such a fellowship. He has been arrested. He's got a six-year sentence. He must have had a Christian background, otherwise he would have been charged with apostasy and faced the death sentence. But he's facing 6 years in prison. But he is suffering poor health because of the terrible conditions there. Please keep informed and pray for people like Pastor Fathi. And the next one, please. This lady was mentioned in the October newsletter, and her name is Mariam Zagaran. She's age 36. She's also in prison for her faith, and she's suffering from a heart condition and finds the poor conditions really challenging there. Please pray for her and others like her. And moving on quickly, there's another brother who's in prison and another one. These are just four of the 60-odd that we know of who are in prison in those terrible conditions in Iran. Can we have the next one, please? Before I sit down, I need to just keep you aware of this situation. You'll all be familiar with this picture now from your news, I guess. You know, these are the schoolgirls in Nigeria who were abducted by the Boko Haram movement over 6 months ago now. A week ago, you may have seen on the news, the president of Nigeria, who rejoices in the name of Good Luck Jonathan, announced to the world that he'd reached a truce with Boko Haram and the girls were going to be released, but nothing has happened since. It would be wonderful if what he was saying is true. Maybe we will see their release, but the experience of this president is that he's just a politician who's playing all sorts of publicity games. And there's been a whole sequence of lies throughout the whole 6 months they've been abducted in terms of how the government's reacting, how they're searching for them. It just isn't happening. Imagine, I forget the number now, 250, 260 girls from mainly Christian communities abducted like this. Imagine how their parents are feeling. Imagine it's just too horrible to even think about what's going on with these girls, how they're being treated. Doesn't bear thinking about. But this is the kind of thing that's going on in Nigeria. Prayer does make a difference. Open Doors are in there. Open Doors have teams going and trying to bring some comfort to the relatives, bringing trauma counselling to Christians who week after week are facing the possibility of this kind of abduction, raids on Christian villages, mass slaughter, bombs, grenades being thrown into churches. Please pray for our brothers and sisters and that this situation will somehow change. The next picture, please. This is just a rough map of the area and the surrounding area. Boko Haram are not just working in Nigeria. They've got very big borders which are impossible to police and patrol, and they just disappear over borders into countries like Cameroon and Chad. And the same kind of threat is happening there as well. So many Christians have been killed and churches attacked in those other countries as well. It must be terrifying to be a Christian. This is the reality of what's going on in our world at the moment. And the next one, please. And just to finish with a reminder, I don't know if you've seen this family before. This is the husband and children of a lady called Asia Bibi in Pakistan. She's on death row, has been on death row for several years on charges of blasphemy. Last week, the charge against her appeal was turned down. They've said that they will carry out the death penalty in her life. She's just one of many in Pakistan because of the terrible blasphemy laws that make it possible for people to make false accusations against Christians. A lot of challenging things going on in the world, and we would love to see more and more people getting involved just to keep informed so you can pray daily for these people. Challenging information, but I hope you're encouraged as well by the fact that people around the world are finding strength in the fact that there's a Saviour who loves them, who gives them passion to keep on sharing their faith despite the opposition and risks that they take. Thanks for listening.